7:04, you have many choices for your morning radio needs. We always appreciate you tuning into The Drive. Dave, Katie, and Nate on an opening football week. So much going on, and speaking of football, we got you covered 7:30 on. Not that we're not going to have you covered in the next segment, too, with four down territory. It's just a ton of football. Sean Salisbury joins us at 7:35. Mike Florio will join us at 8:05 from Pro Football Talk. We have a ton of audio as well to get to at 8:30. So just sit back, relax. We got you taken care of all the way till 9 a.m. If you just tuning in, though, your alarm just went off. Here's what you missed so far on The Drive. Hey, you can hear all that on the podcast later. Don't know why you'd want to. That'll be available shortly after the program ends at khtk.com. I don't think it's fair. During the break, during Nate's update, we played the Grand Slam yesterday from Carlos Gonzalez. But we also, let's play a clip here just to show equal time. Here's the San Francisco Giants and their offense yesterday.
You mean all weekend?
See what I did there? It's pretty clever.
When they have 12 hits in the whole series against the Cubs.
And they had an opportunity to win all four games.
They made history.
They really did.
You know, they made history. They went 40 straight at-bats without a single hit. Hasn't been done since 1980. That was, I believe it was Thursday night's game, the final six innings of that game, into Friday's day game. They finally got a hit from Hunter Pence, I think the top of the seventh. 40 at-bats without a single hit. Holy balls, that's brutal.
Yeah, I'm going to invoke something that is tired and used with them, but this last couple weeks really have been torture, especially that Cubs series, too. You know, even in the win, it was just, oh, my goodness, everything is just pulling your hair out.
Now, worked by the Rockies.
I will say that, like, nothing turns me into a Giants troll fan quicker than Carlos Gonzalez succeeding, because all I want to do is just be like, well, he'd look better in an A's uniform.
Well, they walked Nolan Arenado, too, to get to Carlos Gonzalez. And granted, Arenado's absolutely owned the Giants.
True, but I hate free base runners.
I feel like, I'm not sure how the audio quality is here, but I'm thinking about that last night. I feel like John Miller's almost at this point. I know Bob Uecker swears at the end of that, so I cut it off. That's from Major League, and that's what it feels like. I feel like John Miller and the boys, it'd probably be Kiper, actually. They're wrapping it up at Coors Field, and Kiper's sitting there saying, two hits at Coors Field? Are you kidding me? That's all we got is two GD hits? What the hell is going on here? And it really, Nate, you talk about the last couple weeks with the Giants. It's been the last couple of months. It's the All-Star break.
And they had injury issues before, but they can't use that as an excuse now. They've pretty much got everyone back and in the lineup where they need them to be. And you know, they can shuffle the batting order around a little bit. But it's like, what is it that you can do to kind of ignite this offense a little bit? I think Bruce Bochy's sitting there, like, just scratching his head. There's nothing he can do.
It's about rituals at this point. You got to start working into some superstition of some sort. Dave, when you were gone, we had Amy G on, and I asked her. I asked her. I was like, hey, you know, 2010, they had the rally thong. Remember that? They had the rally thong. They had the machine. They had all kinds of stuff going on there. And so I asked if there was anything this year, if they'd veered in that direction, and she was like, maybe we ought to get the thong on you.
Something.
Yeah. Seriously, she said
she
was
said
like,
it to,
like,
she said
like
it to
three
Nate.
Times yeah. was trying to get the rally thong
and
on
then
you.
She might be on something.
I'm thinking, it got Nate so worked up that he decided that he maybe wanted to take part in it. And so I think he was thinking, maybe I'll tweet Amy G a picture of me in my red rally thong. And then he realized that Amy G has blocked him on Twitter.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
What did you say to her?
I don't know.
What'd you say?
Dude, I've done Twitter searches for, like, my handle and anything to do with Amy G, like tagging her or just typing Amy G or, like, anything I've done. I have not seen one tweet that I've ever done that even addressed.
You Your face
Amy
is
Gutierrez.
Offensive.
We need to talk about this when she comes on next.
Your face is offensive.
I don't know if I want to know.
Did you, well, cause you think maybe you got drunk one night and said something stupid
on
Twitter?
Okay,
well,
I definitely didn't tag her in anything inappropriate, okay? The only thing I can think of is that I may have commented on a friend's tweet where they said something about her.
She like, group dude, blocked you?
Yeah, it's possible, because I know that happened to one of my friends where he got caught in a situation, like, found out he was actually blocked by her husband because he had made some third-hand remark or
Paul
something.
Paul Gutierrez.
Yeah, so.
In all fairness, when Nate found this out, not only was he really troubled by the news. He was very upset. We spent a whole segment on it, in fact.
Maybe send her that picture of you in a thong. But, like a rubber band on a party favor, by the way, from Nate in a thong.
But to his credit, he said...
I'm doing a human pretzel.
I absolutely can tell you this 100% right now. Whatever it is that that got me blocked, it's my fault.
Oh, sure.
There's no doubt. Whatever I did is...
She didn't just do it arbitrarily for fun. Meanwhile, you got Chad Don't Call Me Jerome Bettis with a complete game against the Giants. 9 innings, 2 hits, 7 strikeouts. Well, he's been on a tear lately with his outings of 5, 3, 5, and 6 innings, with his ERA at 5 going into yesterday's game. And then he just looks amazing. Hey, Bettis is a good picture. But you're at Coors Field. 2 hits.
Yeah.
Now, you see games like that at Coors Field, you think they're messing with the baseballs, right? That's what's ruined me about that place. Ever since they started putting the balls in the humidor, anytime I see a Rockies blowout win at home, they're cheaters.
A humidor? What the heck does that do?
You
put cigars in that. What does it do to a baseball?
It keeps it
fresh.
It keeps it wet. The humidity.
Because the way the air,
it keeps it moist.
The thin air in Denver,
yes.
It leads to a lot of runs because the ball travels farther,
understand
blah, blah, blah.
All of these things.
Okay, so putting the ball in the humidor keeps, like, the barometric pressure like it would be at sea level or something like that. And
hashtag done, science.
Right, well.
I thought it heavied down the ball.
That's basically what it is.
The humidity.
No one's really, like, totally sure that it works to a statistically significant degree, but we know that they have a humidor in Colorado.
Giants are 4 games behind the Dodgers. Somebody texting in right now is all happy. How about them Dodgers? I don't know. 1988 called. Check out their trophy from then. How about them Dodgers?
How about them?
Win a freaking title.
Go big blue.
Do something. Get out of my face with that. Giants
Dodgers.
Currently a half game up on the Cardinals and 1.5 up on the Mets for the 2 wild card spots available. They're 9 games over 500 right now. By contrast, in case you were curious, by the way, the Chicago Cubs have a 16.5 game lead on the Cardinals this year. Already have 89 wins. This is going to be a 100 win Cub team.
You think so? Yeah.
I know probably, so. Yeah, they're gonna bust 100 wins. If there's any consolation, if the Giants don't make the playoffs, it's that I don't have to make some sort of internal decision if they end up facing the Cubs in the NLCS. So I'd, of course, root for the Giants, but I would feel bad beating the Cubs.
Once
the Giants get knocked out, I'm totally rooting for the Cubs and all their fans.
You're going to get a hat and everything?
No. I'm not a Cubs fan, but I will.
Cubs hat for you.
I will root for the Cubs and their fans. I would love to see them win a title if the Giants can't. We'll take a break. We'll come back. 4 Down Territory is next on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Ow. Ow.
He's a man who lives in a big house, is a natural leader, and stands up publicly for national issues. And the other guy's the president that just started talking. Hey, Colin Kaepernick, his jersey sales are number 2 in the league, and that's President Obama who is backing him. Has the tide now turned for Mr. Colin Kaepernick?
I think so. I think it has from the initial 48, 72 hours when this came out, and there were a lot of people wanted to put him on a rocket ship out of here. Now, listen, that doesn't mean for everyone listening right now that everyone's on his side and people aren't still deeply offended by it. But it seems that the public perception overall, including his jersey sales as an example, has turned, and there are a lot of people piling behind Colin Kaepernick.
I think that people's reaction to his choice of protest has softened a little bit as he has, and he's gotten much more eloquent in kind of talking about the issues and the problems that he has. I think the discussion with Nate Boyer was a huge, plus for him in terms of turning this message in the right way. That's when they decided that they would, and Eric Reed and his teammate also joined in with him, not sit, but kneel during the anthem, which I think was a really good idea because it softens the thing. It shows that it is not anti-military. He's really just using it as a form of protest about some change that he thinks needs to be enacted in this country.
Well, speaking of Nate Boyer, here's what he had to say about that.
It's probably been 15 years, if not more, since I spent money on NFL apparel. If anything was going to get me to do it, it would be a sign of solidarity with Colin Kaepernick. That's all I can really say on that. Text, I don't know. I still don't know if I'm going to throw down the money for it, but.
Text line is 44-1140.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw that out there. You get angry fingers going. That's that.
Well, guys, the Minnesota Vikings have officially thrown in the towel for this season. They traded for Sam Bradford. Does this actually improve their chances without Teddy Bridgewater?
Does it improve their chances without him? I mean, it improves their chances of actually putting a quarterback on the field that is semi-serviceable, but it's not even close. They are in so much trouble without Teddy Bridgewater. So I don't understand. They're not going to win the division with Sam Bradford. Like, so what? They can play the games. Does that improve their chances?
Play okay. To win the game.
I think Sam Bradford can be every bit as dynamic as Teddy Bridgewater was last year. As long as Adrian Peterson's healthy, yes, it makes them better. The real question to me is, what does Sam Bradford have on these GMs? How did the Eagles get a first-round pick in return for this guy? He wasn't worth the first-round pick that the Rams used on him initially when he came into the league. It doesn't make a great deal of sense.
He must have an amazing PowerPoint presentation.
here's the numbers, and numbers tend to lie, but last year Sam Bradford played in 14 games for the Philadelphia Eagles, who had a fairly tumultuous year. He had 3,700 yards and change, 19 touchdowns, 14 picks for an 86 rating. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers out there. Teddy Bridgewater last year played in all 16. He had 14 touchdowns and 9 picks for an 88 rating. The numbers are semi-similar. The difference is, Teddy, when you talk about dynamic, if you want to put dynamic in there, he's going to rush for a couple more yards than Sam Bradford. I mean, that's really...
He's got potential, too.
Sure he does.
It's called upside.
But here's what's interesting. Teddy Bridgewater last year, he rushed for 192 yards. I think there's this misconception that Teddy Bridgewater's like a 5, 6, 700-yard rushing quarterback.
By who?
Yeah, by them. I don't know. Like, Teddy Bridgewater's this crazy mobile quarterback, and he can get out of trouble. But Teddy Bridgewater also showed that he was a little less prone to mistakes last year than Sam Bradford was. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what might make the difference. Laquon Treadwell out of Ole Miss, I love this kid. I love him at wide receiver. I loved him in college. He's going to be, along with Stephon Diggs, they've got a couple of really good threats there. If Bradford can just get him the ball.
It's a couple of rookies there in Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott. Prescott, of course, getting the start because Tony Romo is dead. And Wentz, after dealing with some
DNR,
broken ribs,
huh? on the field.
Was named the starter for the Eagles in week one. So the question, of course, which one's going to have a better season, guys?
Let's see. That's tough, man. I'll tell you this. First stop is offensive line. We talk about offensive line being the key to any football team offensively, no doubt about it. Dak Prescott by far has the better offensive line, by far. He's got a running back. You want to talk about Colin Kaepernick being number two in jersey sales? Number one is Ezekiel Elliott. That doesn't mean he's going to be good, but all expectations are Ezekiel Elliott's going to be a fantastic running back. And again, he has the best line in the NFL going. And arguably, with apologies to Antonio Brown, you've got the second best receiver, perhaps third, Julio Jones, with Dez Bryant. So Dak has more weapons to me. I think Carson Wentz is the better quarterback, but I think Dak Prescott has more tools and a better line.
These are two rookie quarterbacks. How are you supposed to know the answer to this? My gut says that Prescott, because of everything Dave just listed, I think that he has better people around him. And I have this tendency to think, with absolutely nothing to back it up with, that Carson Wentz is maybe a little bit overrated right now, and he's not quite ready to run an NFL team. I don't think he was expected to be either when they drafted him, so I don't know.
They're both going to stink. Neither of those teams are going to win a lot of games, but you guys are both right. Prescott has more protection.
Hey, no.
All right, guys. Are you a Red Zone Channel person or a My Team and Game of the Hour person?
I'm so much a freaking Red Zone Channel person. Red Zone Channel, exactly, and that is the channel for ADD. Now, you can go with the like 8 games at the same time on the screen thing if you really have ADD, but I can't follow that much, and I end up missing stuff. Red Zone Channel, Andrew Siciliano takes me through, boom, 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 boom. I just went through my yearly conversation with DirecTV where I call, you know, and again, if you haven't done this before, feel free. hey, I'm looking to cancel my subscription. It's too expensive. It's Sunday Ticket. I just can't do it. Try it, and you get a great deal on Sunday Ticket. They will drop that price down to next to nothing or nothing at all for you. So I got my Sunday Ticket.
The not-so-breaking news from Carmichael Dave on how to
muscle
your NFL package.
The more you know.
I do not like the red zone. I don't like all of the flipping back and forth. I'll watch a couple games and go back and forth. But if you're at a sports bar or something where they've got all the games up, I love that because I can follow all that. But for some reason, having the remote in my hand with that red zone channel, I'm like, ugh.
No need a remote with red zone.
I flip back and forth between the red zone and the game I want to go to, and it's just too much for me.
We'll fix that.
I realize how red zone works. Thanks, Dave.
We'll fix that for you, Katie.
I need full immersion, guys, because when I see a touchdown, I need to know what play happened a quarter and a half ago, what series set that up, why that play-action shot was there, because they've been pounding the run for two quarters, and they bid on the play fake for the power run left. Things like that. I need the context for the score. Red Zone doesn't do that for me.
All right. Well, hey, Katie and Nate, both wrong. Red Zone rules. Take a break. We'll come back. I'm curious how Sean Salisbury watches the NFL. Former quarterback, guy who does this for a living. Very curious if he is a red zone guy. I have a feeling he's more like Nate. I think he's got to immerse himself into a game. I completely understand.
It'll be a two-minute answer no matter what it is.
Hey, you know what? That's why we love him on The Drive.
Right.
Sports 1140 KHDK. We'll be at Twin Peaks tonight making our fantasy football draft. I'm going to call Katie about 2 this afternoon. I'll bet you anything she's got her little reading glasses on in front of her computer taking notes, getting ready for her draft. Because she'll feign that she doesn't care yet at the same time. Her competitive nature will overwhelm her.
Yes, I'm competitive.
Yes, you are.
Does not mean I care.
Before we give you...
What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's English.
Yeah. That's her saying I'm not...
Well, I understand what a sentence is and how you put words
That's
together.
That's English.
But...
I can't put it into another language so you can maybe understand it there.
Competitive, it doesn't mean I care.
Right, exactly. That's logic. Before we get to Sean, I'll give you your quote of the day at 7:37. You're not going to hear a better quote than this. Tony Romo has been left on the 53-man roster, even though he has a compression fracture in his back. And owner and general manager Jerry Jones said, we don't have anybody valuable enough to take up that lost spot. There's just not enough value there realistically to bring somebody else in. You don't have to spend a lot of time going over and kind of circumcising a mosquito.
I think that's exactly how that phrase is meant to be used.
I don't know how it possibly is. It might be a Texas thing.
Is that possible?
It's like a euphemism for something that's difficult.
Sure. But as we bring in Sean Salisbury, who knows quite a bit about living in Texas, I don't know. Is that maybe that's just a Texas phrase? Sean, have you ever heard... Don't spend a lot of time circumcising a mosquito.
I've heard a lot of and seen a lot of roaches big enough to circumcise. I'm not quite sure about mosquitoes, but it's Jerry. So stay tuned.
It's Jerry.
Well, you know, it's a fine weekend. We have Thursday coming up with the opening of the NFL. And I know with you, Sean, you understand this being a California kid, even though you're in Texas. It's amazing, and I lament this quite a bit, Sean. In Sacramento, particularly, college football does not move the needle at all. But yet, where you are, and certainly a couple states east of you, it's all anyone's talking about today. Opening weekend, college football, you had Michigan, you had Notre Dame. You had so many things I saw you commenting on. But first, hey, let's get your thoughts on Ole Miss Florida State last night, shall we?
It was needless to say, the turnaround was incredible. I don't know if there's a better coach in football, and that's at any level, when it comes to being able to watch your team come out and kind of be sluggish and then go in at halftime. I don't know what Jimbo does at halftime, Jimbo Fisher, but I'm not sure I've ever seen or watched or maybe even been in a locker room with a coach who gets guys to come back out and believe in themselves more. It's uncanny the things that they do and the momentum they change. They did it when Jameis was there. Francois is now doing it. They're athletic. I mean, all the obvious physical skills that they have, but there's something about him. And if you think about the way he attacks offensively, he was a redshirt freshman that nobody knew how good he could be. He knew he was a great high school player. Starts off slow. And most guys' tendency would be, well, back off, let's protect him, maybe use a two-quarterback system. No, Jimbo attacks. He puts the ball in the kid's hand and doesn't care if he fumbled early in the game, doesn't care if he was getting hit and that kid stood in the pocket and gritted his jaw and took a bunch of shots and kept coming. And it's almost like Jimbo challenges him and then wants him to do that. And so, but he's always done that. And there is a common theme here. There's never been a worse, and I'm talking about a worse coach, head coach at dealing with quarterbacks and understanding how to and misusing them more than Les Miles. He's the absolute biggest bonehead when it comes to that. They have the greatest football players on the planet each year, and they don't know how to do it. You know, when they were good throwing the football and developing quarterbacks in an offense that wasn't archaic is when Jimbo Fisher was the offensive coordinator.
Yep.
So this is a theme. This is a trend and why this guy is so good. He turned a quarterback into something special last night, and this kid will only get better. No man in this league or no man on Sundays is better at bringing a team out of the locker room and having them believe in themselves. And Jimbo Fisher was an amazing comeback.
Sean, Leonard Fournette was so strong last year that he sparked a bit of a debate as to whether or not he should even come back for his second season and maybe even just take the year off until he's eligible for the draft. If you were in his position, would you have come back to LSU?
I don't believe in the take the year off and sit out as a college kid. I do believe if you're eligible to go to the NFL draft, you do it. In his case, I do, especially as a running back, when there's not a whole lot of. I mean, we'll milk 7 or 8 years, 9 years of your life. You hit 30, man, we got you. We milked it all out of you. Leonard Fournette, you know, interesting case, but when you're with your, draft eligible, I think he's what now? Is a true junior? Is that what he is now?
Yeah.
Because he was a true sophomore last year, so he couldn't come out. But I, just like when Clowney was talking about it when he was out South Carolina, I'm not a big believer in, because I think you let your teammates down. Oh, I'm a sophomore, but I don't think there can be a more selfish move, although there's a lot of selfish athletes to say, well, I'm a sophomore, I'm the best player on your team. You guys go play. I'm going to sit at home and just train and wait for my turn to come up. You sign a scholarship, you go play. So I like the fact that he did that. Now, had he been a redshirt sophomore or draft eligible after last year, he'd have been, if you take him in the first five picks, he's a full-grown man. But I can tell you this, if you're a good football player there and you're draft eligible and you're at a perimeter position and the scouts like you, leave, because the quarterback position will bury you there. I train a kid, and I'll leave his name out, who right now is 6'6". He's the best sophomore in the country. If he's not first, he's not third. Every school in the country wants him. I'm going to tell you, right, if they knocked on his door now, I'm not so sure I'd encourage him to go there. Not because great fans, great place, awesome place. But you go there to die as a quarterback. You just do. They won't let the governor on. I mean, it's uncanny. Five-star quarterbacks become two-star players at LSU at that position while everybody else is great. The opposite of Bill Snyder at Kansas State, he takes a two-star recruit and turns him into a four-star player, and they compete well with everybody. So I don't know what it is. Les Miles can recruit, but there's no bigger – when it comes to airhead and boneheaded ways to deal with a quarterback, I just don't get it for a guy who wins 9 or 10 games every year, how awful it is. So, yeah, they got a long way to go. But if you're draft eligible and you're talented, leave. If you're a quarterback, especially at that school, or running back, because the running back's going to get beat up and the quarterback's not going to get much more development.
Sean Salisbury joining us this morning on The Drive. I've got to ask you about the situation with the Vikings. I think when Teddy Bridgewater went down, everyone's scratching their heads, wondering what they're going to do. They trade for Sam Bradford. I don't know that I think this is the best option, but was it just the best available option for them?
Best available, but man alive. Now, I think Sam Bradford's a nice kid. I don't think he's – I think he's just a below-average quarter. I think he's a middle of the – I think he's just a guy. I do. And his offseason bothered me when they draft the first round, and he's talking about, I don't really want to compete. I want to be guaranteed. What has he done to guarantee that he should be the guy? He hasn't. And keeping him on the field is another thing. Now, I trust Vikings offensive coordinator and their head coach. I've known Norv a long time, and he'll work well with him. Sam's a smart guy. But I said on Twitter – and. Now, if they end up making the playoffs, then, you know, I don't have a problem standing up saying he proved me wrong this year. I've been wrong many times before. But I said trading it legalized theft for the Eagles to get a first and a fourth for Bradford. Talk about desperation. They were going to cut him this offseason. I mean, after this year, they'd have cut him. They're going to play Wentz anyway. They would have cut him or asked somebody, you want to trade for a fifth-round pick to take on this salary? They would have cut him. So now the Vikings, because of an injury to Bridgewater, you get him. I said it's like – giving a first-round pick for Bradford would be like giving an Academy Award to the movie Snakes on a Plane. I mean, it is like, what? But it's desperation now. Middle of the road, got a great running back, got some good receivers. You added Treadwell. Your defense is pretty nasty. Mike Zimmer can coach. The Vikings have high hopes. If Bradford can stay on the field, is he a better option than Sean Hill? Yeah. Of course, better option than Sanchez? Yeah. But is he worth a first and a fourth round pick? Absolutely not. But, you know, needs and the rest of it. And if he gets them to the playoffs, I will. He has a good season. I'll stand up and cheer him on. I just don't. I think this is a big time reach for a first round pick. I wouldn't have done it if I was the Vikings. But I'm going to tell you what, as the Eagles, you lost your first rounder to Wentz. Now you get one back. God bless you.
Sean, I'm going to wind this question around a bit. There's a debate in the NBA, as you know, as to whether or not the three-point shot is the way to go and the big man is dead. And some people wonder, is that because of strategy or because of lack of big men? In the NFL, you have kind of a similar debate with running backs, where a lot of teams have gone to two- and three-back rotations. Is it because NFL offenses are moving away from running the ball, or is it because of a lack of talent? That being said, Derrick Henry and Ezekiel Elliott come into the NFL this year. You mentioned Leonard Fournette. Now you've got Dalvin Cook. You've got Christian McCaffrey. And Nick Chubb coming off that injury and busting for a triple deuce, 222 against a good North Carolina team. Are we on the verge of seeing that trend change in the NFL with all those backs going in over a two-year period?
We better be, Dave. I was talking about that yesterday on my show. I said we've devalued the running back in the NFL. I mean, heck, even Derrick Henry, we moved him to the second round. 10 years ago, we'd have drafted him in the first round.
Yep.
But we did with you know, what Mike Shanahan used to do in Denver and getting guys in the fifth round. You saw when Alfred Morris had that big year in Washington, late, you know, mid-round draft pick. I mean, so it works out, so it becomes a trend like everything else. If the 46 defense is great, we trend into the 46 defense. If spread offenses are working, we trend and we go there, and it's cyclical. And then all of a sudden, we start to creep our way back to some traditional stuff. It happens. And this position has been devalued. But I'll tell you, as a former quarterback and an average one, I can assure you this. We devalue them, but the players don't. Because when there's 4 minutes to go in the game and we need three first downs to kill the clock, who do you think we need? We want Marshawn Lynch in the backfield, or we want Leonard Fournette, or we want Todd Gurley. Trust me, when Lynch was playing, you know, you think Seattle didn't value that? And it's the same when it's third and one on the one, and we got to go, or second and one inside the three, and we got to go three plays, and we got to knock them right in their mouth. Bill Parcells didn't devalue the running back. He always said, bring your own blocker, buddy, because it's low man wins, and it's an attitude. Running is an attitude. And so I do think that we're starting to bring it back. You watch Henry, he'll share time with Murray. Well, Elliott probably going to be the rookie of the year behind that line. You start to look at what Todd Gurley's done. Heck, Jeff Fisher even tells his guys during that Hard Knocks, don't bring him to the ground. So while they're devalued in the draft because we think we can get a third rounder, the great ones are the great ones. They don't fall off a turn-up truck and land in the league. And you're right. I'm looking, and let's not forget what Freeman at Oregon.
Yep.
Heck, Shock Lynn was not going to be a first-round pick, but this kid's a home run hitter at Baylor. You mentioned Chubb. You mentioned McCaffrey. You mentioned Dalvin Cook. You mentioned Leonard Fournette. I mean, how can you not say, man, look at Todd Gurley, and why wouldn't I run Leonard Fournette out there and help my young quarterback or help my quarterback and run it 25 times a game with him? So I do think for the first time in a while that next year we could have 4 or 5 first-round picks. Now, we may not, but I know right now when you look at them on paper, there's 4 or 5 guys that are first-round talent. Now it just depends on if you're the Tennessee Titans, you're not going to take one because you got one in the second round. But if you're a team that you think, oh, my gosh, there's a 26th pick and Nick Chubb sitting there and he can give me some Todd Gurley love, I'll jump all over it. So I don't devalue them. The NFL has, for whatever reason, because of success. When you get that guy who we call a bell cow, who can load you up and take you to places, you draft him. And there's a bunch of those guys in this draft next year.
Sean Salisbury joining us on KHTK. Sean, you guys were talking about Christian McCaffrey, and we've seen guys like that before in college. And frankly, Reggie Bush kind of comes to mind, dudes that just look like they're playing a video game out there. And every time they touch the ball, no matter how it is, they're a threat to score. I'm just curious, what does Christian McCaffrey look like to you as an NFL player? What does he do in that sense?
I'm actually shocked when I see, I guess we call him an expert, an analyst, or somebody write that, oh, McCaffrey's, you know, not an every down back and he should be okay in the NFL. I'm shocked when I see that. I'm a Reggie Bush fan and always have been. He's an SC guy. McCaffrey's better.
Wow.
And he's bigger. McCaffrey's about 6'1", 205 pounds. This is not a This is not just a little boy running through people because he's quick. He will knock you. He will knock your you know what right in the dirt. This is a first of all smart family, great athletic family, tough. His dad Eddie was tough. This kid, I'm telling you now, he'll rush for 1,200 yards from the backfield, and if you put him in the slot as a rookie, he'll catch 100 balls if he's with the right quarterback. So I don't care where you play him. Well, he can take the punishment. This is a stud. I don't know. He should have won the Heisman last year. I don't disrespect Deshaun Watson or Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
But the best player in college football last year was Stanford's running back. There's no question about it. You look at the yards from behind the line of scrimmage. You can your return game in the slot. No matter where you put him, that kid will be playing in a Pro Bowl, and he instantly makes your team better. So he's tough. He's fast. He's strong. He's smart. He's talented. He's a great teammate. What's not to like? He's durable. So to me, he may not be the first back taken because he's not the 6'3", 220-pound Fournette, and I get it. But there's no more versatile player not only on Saturday right now. Find me a guy on Sunday who right now is more, I guess, Antonio Brown because he can return kicks, play wide receiver. But you find me a more versatile player on Sunday right now than Christian McCaffrey. You can't find it. I've looked. I haven't found it. The guy can do it. He's Marshall Faulk with more speed. That's what he is.
Ooh.
He's Marshall Faulk.
Wow.
He's not as big in the backfield. Obviously, Marshall's a better pure runner. But I'm talking about, you know, we could line up Marshall Faulk at wide receiver. The way he – with formations, the way you could move him around, he's not as pure a runner as Marshall from the backfield, but he's a better receiver, and Marshall was a great receiver and a smart player. That's the type of guy he is. You can deploy him anywhere, and he creates mismatch problems. I think that Christian McCaffrey is a grown man. I have no problem drafting him high in the first round. He's a difference maker on a franchise.
So put on the hat of all the other GMs in the NFL, not you, but the way GMs work. 6 foot, 220, unanimous All-American, Doak Walker Award, Jim Brown Trophy, Offensive Player of the Year, Heisman Trophy runner-up, first team All-Pac-10. Now, of course, the guy I'm talking about, the running back for Stanford, is Toby Gerhart back in 2009. Are there going to be some guys out there in the NFL that are going to punish Christian McCaffrey for Toby Gerhart?
Of course they are. Sure, and you should. And just like with USC quarterback, and I'm being serious, that we've had some guys getting drafted in the first round. But we've had a bad run of SC quarterbacks and their success on Sundays in the last 15 years. Pump Palmer's been good, but you know there's been some guys that have struggled at times. Yeah, but I'm telling you, Dave, those two. As much as I love Kobe's toughness, they can't even dress in the same area when it comes to football players.
Yeah.
So there will be some. Oh well, he's a white running back. Oh, another white running back. Oh, he's got similar size. You know, 6'1". He's not as big as Gerhart, but he's a running back who's ran for a lot of yards and was pretty versatile. Toby was a good football player. They're not even in the same, you know. Not even. I always find it funny. I mean, why can't I compare Christian McCaffrey to Reggie Bush? We did. Isn't it funny how like we always seem to have to the people out there always have to compare. Ooh. A Stanford white running back. We laugh about this on our show. Why can't I compare Christian McCaffrey to LeSean McCoy?
We had this conversation about a month ago with someone else. I forget who it was. We were talking about Jameis Winston, and we all agreed that the best comparison for Jameis Winston was Ben Roethlisberger. But for the same reason, you don't see that comparison that often.
Oh, exactly. It's true. Both kind of awkward in the pocket, but extend the play. Both big, strong arm. Yeah, and they're both winners. Exactly. So I laugh at this, but yeah. And it's not disrespect to Toby Gerhart. He was a hell of a college player. Sure. and gave you some toughness on Sunday. The fellas, that's a whole different world we're talking about, the difference between McCaffrey and Gerhart. And I'd be shocked if Toby Gerhart didn't admit the same thing.
Last thing for you, because we got to wrap up. We always appreciate your time. Sean, we saw the rosters get finalized over the weekend in the NFL, and you played for quite a while with the Minnesota Vikings, but I'm sure there was a time and a place during your career where you looked for whatever it is, the little pink slip in your locker, or what is it, the guy called the Turk that comes and gets you. Talk about the final day of cutdowns for a player.
It's not, well, you know, we're watching games, you know, we'll joke and say, oh, who cares about the fourth preseason game? I don't care about that. Who cares about the first preseason game? I mean, it means football's back and we're excited. And I try to caution myself at times because I say, you know, who cares? is that dude whose life's going to change either good or either for the better, that he's a sixth rounder and he can't believe he made a squad that's going to change his family's life, and he's going to go to a Pro Bowl, or he's going to make a squad for 4 years and make enough money to go back to grad school, or just whatever. He's going to fulfill a lifelong dream. And then there's the guy who makes it to the final cut, and he's the last guy that they call in, and then he's going to get, you know, then maybe somebody else will pick him up, put him on a practice squad. Maybe they won't. Maybe it's a 9-year veteran that this is it, that he thinks he's got two more years in him, but he'll never, and he's not even, he just turned 30, 31, and he's never going to play again. That the greatest, that the one thing that we loved to do and knew how to do, you no longer get to do it because of age, and your life's just starting, and you're only 30 years old, and you're never going to get a chance to play again. And there's that kid whose family's going crazy. I can remember when I made my first team, that I'm drafted, sixth quarterback on the draft in Seattle, on the roster, and made the team when camp started. I was the sixth guy. I can never forget the feeling when Chuck Knox shook my hand and congratulated me. I thought, honestly, it was the greatest feeling of my life. I couldn't believe that I just made an NFL team as the sixth quarterback on the roster. So, and I can remember the first time they told me that they were going in a different direction. Your heart goes into your stomach. You think, what am I going to do next? You hope somebody picks you up. So it is a complete life changer both ways. Some guys will keep fighting and milk it any way they can, which is great. I mean, hey, you only get so many chances. And then some guy's going to wake up and he's going to go check his first paycheck and he's going to say, man, this sure beat $30,000 at, you know, working as a salesman on commission. So, yeah, I was very blessed, and it's a great time and in a sad time for others. So that fourth preseason and that second preseason game may not mean anything to us, but it means a lot to them. Mm-hmm.
He's the best guest in sports radio today, in my opinion. Sean Salisbury giving us a segment every single Monday. Usually at 8:05, we move stuff around, and he was nice enough to join us at 7:35. Buddy, next week when we talk, we're going to have a whole weekend of NFL. Check Sean out, of course, at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. Thanks, my man.
Always appreciate you three. Thank you.
All right. See you later.
That's Sean Salisbury joining us.
It is crazy, like, hearing him talk about, you know, when you make a team and when you get released, like the crazy. It's crazy as an athlete. I don't think
you've gone through that too, have you?
I absolutely have. Yeah. And it is the weirdest thing to think that your professional playing career can end at a time when a lot of people are just starting their actual career.
Can't imagine that. Yeah. Like, can you imagine?
And that's all you've done your entire life. And that's it. And then all of a sudden it's just over. And there's no indication that it's coming. It just happens.
Thank God sports radio doesn't work like that. Yeah. You have training camp every summer. And then right before NFL season starts, you find out who made the squad, who didn't. Man, I'd have a big briefcase by now if that was the case. I'd be living out of the trunk of my car. Thank God there's
Jim
no
Tom
cuts.
Jim Tomasula, Sports Radio.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. No one has their finger on the pulse of the National Football League more than he. He joins us next as we continue Football Tuesday on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.